WMFO, Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there's no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Good morning. It's the 14th of August, 2019. You're listening to Arthur here on the grand hour. We're going back to 1956. Seems like I've been locked in that year except for that Phil Cole mystery I played last week. Bob Bailey sold me on returning to one of his dailies, the Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, episode 316, The Flight 6 Matter. This had an original air date of the 30th of January, 1956. At that point in 1956, Elvis was not hardly a household name. But we're gonna, at the end of the program today, we're gonna bookend Fort Laramie with Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. I'll follow up on the second part of Flight 6 Matter after a Fort Laramie starring Raymond Burr at the midsection of the show today. Again, this is Arthur. You're listening to the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org.
From Hollywood, it's time now for Johnny Dollar.
Pete Codley, Johnny. Guaranteed transport.
Oh, hiya, Pete.
Seen the papers?
No, I just got up. Why? What's happened?
Air crash, for one thing.
Air crash? Where?
Mexico. Flight 6, Aztec Caribbean line, Mexico City to Havana. Crashed in the mountains 10 minutes after takeoff. 7 passengers and a crew of 3.
Survivors?
The way it sounds, none.
Oh, tough. How do you come into it, Pete?
We underwrite a company that handles flight insurance down there. 3 of the passengers bought policies at the airport. We're stuck for $75,000. This is a nice time of the year in Mexico, Johnny.
What do you want me to do? Find out why it crashed?
No, I know why it crashed. Somebody meant for it to.
What do you mean?
That plane blew up in midair. I'll get you a reservation.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Home Office Guaranteed Transport Insurance Company, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Flight 6 matter. Item 1, $173.20, airline fare and incidentals, Hartford, Connecticut to Mexico City. I checked my baggage through customs and started making inquiries, and more inquiries, and then some more. And after the 14th, quien sabe, maybe is better you ask him, I found the office I was looking for. Or at least I thought I'd found it. The flowery Spanish title on the door translated roughly into Inspector General of the Department of Civil Air Transport. But when I opened the door, I wasn't so sure.
Come in, Jack. Make yourself to home.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was looking for
You found him. That's me. Don't let the big words on the door fool you. I'm all there is. There ain't no more. So come in. Shut the door.
All right, thanks.
Is your name Dollar?
That's right, Johnny Dollar.
Macklin here. Macklin. One-time mongrel from the south side of Chicago. I got a wire from your office. Said you'd be in on Pan Am Flight 12. Pull up a chair and squat, will you?
All right.
Well, what were you expecting? Spanish grandee with a white silk shirt, a black silk tie, and a second cousin on the cabinet?
Well, maybe. At least I wasn't figuring on a Southside Mick with a 17th century desk and a cotton sweatshirt.
Well, now, here's what little dope we've got on the crash. Most of it you probably know already.
I left on 20-minute notice. All I've seen is one newspaper item. I can use a lot more.
Well, you won't get much more out of that report. We got a crew over at the wreckage around 2 hours ago.
Survivors?
No, he didn't have a chance. That crate is scattered over 10 acres of mountainside. Didn't catch fire, though, so we might turn up something or other. Well, got a good man in charge up there. Juno Romero. You'll meet him later. I'm sending another jeep up there in a few minutes, and you can go along if you want.
Thanks, I will. My company figures sabotage. Any chance they're wrong? Could it have been accidental? Equipment failure, personnel failure, something like that?
Well, if I thought so, I'd be up there at the wreck myself. That'd be my kind of job, but this one's different. You know, it's detective work, your kind of job. And Gino Romero's. Now, he talks as soft as a girl out of finishing school. Looks a little like one, in fact. But underneath it, he's as sharp as a tack and tougher than an old boot full of nails.
What actually happened when the plane went down? All I've heard is that it blew up in midair.
That's right. Well, a few Indians were on the only ones who saw it. They were burning charcoal up on a slope at about 9,000 feet. They were watching the plane circle, gaining altitude. Then one big flash, the tail blew off. Pilot didn't have a chance. He rode it straight into the side of the mountain.
The tail? That sounds like the baggage compartment.
That's the way I figure it. An explosive of some kind. A time bomb smuggled on board before the takeoff. I'm covering that angle from this end. I'm rounding up every one of the baggage gang, the maintenance crew, anybody who had a chance to get near that plane before it left the field out there.
And what have you found out?
Well, so far, nothing. We're trying to check back, too, on the individual passengers, the plane crew, trying to find out who might benefit by having any one of them dead. Well, I guess that'll be your angle, too.
Yeah. Yeah, at least as far as insurance is concerned.
Well, there were 3 flight policies issued. And the names are in the reports here somewhere.
Yeah, I know. I've got them. The Home Office gave them to me, along with the names of the beneficiaries.
I haven't talked to any of them yet. I figured that you know how to go about it better than I would.
Now, there's another possible insurance angle, and that's the cargo. Do you know if there was anything valuable on board?
Worth destroying for the insurance, you mean? No, it was done by somebody who deliberately set out to kill one of the 10 people on board that plane. And who didn't mind killing 9 others to get that one. It was premeditated, cold-blooded. Now, you get him, Johnny. Get him for me, and then just leave me alone with him for about... Come in.
One of you, Senor McLean, Inspector General del Departamento...
Yes, that's me. What can I do for you, Jack?
They will not give to me any information, Senor McLean. Not the police, nor the airline office, nor any...
Who are you, and what information do you want?
I am Ramon de Lagos, Senor, and I am here...
De Lagos?
Wait a minute. That's the name of one of the...
Yes. Look, are you related to... Maria de Lagos.
My wife. She was on the plane. Now tell me, please, what news do you have? Have you reached the scene of the crash?
Yes, we have. 2 hours ago.
And what did you... Is there any chance...
I'm sorry, there were no survivors.
No. Oh, no.
I'm sorry, Senor de Lagos.
It is too terrible.
I didn't know you were here in the city, or I'd have let you know right away. I sent word to your office in Havana.
I have been here for 6 weeks. Maria came for a visit only a few days ago.
Now? I know, it's a rough deal. I am sorry. This is Johnny Dollar from the States.
Senor?
Later, sir.
He's here to investigate the cause of this thing.
What is the use, Senor? It will not return life to the dead.
No, but I don't like to see a murderer get away with it.
A murderer? Then the rumors are true.
The plane was destroyed deliberately.
It is hard to believe that anyone would... Senor McLean, what arrangements are being made?
The bodies will be brought down to the Federal District Hospital. And I'll see that you're notified.
Gracias, senor.
No, let's see. I believe your wife's brother, Don Serrano, is staying at the Hotel Regis.
Yes, he is. But I am at the Monte Cassino. Don Serrano and I are not friendly.
I see. All right, senor, then I'll contact you at the Monte Cassino as soon as I have word.
You are very kind.
And again, I'm... Well, I'm sorry.
Yes, that is all one can say. Adios, senores.
Know anything about him, Mac?
Well, only what his wife filled out on the flight form. He's Cuban. Residence and business address, Havana. In the export game. And you know, of course, that his wife was one of the three people who took out accident policies.
But naming her brother, Don Serrano, as beneficiary, I wonder why.
Well, that's one of the 6 dozen questions you can ask when you start prowling. Look, I hate to rush you, Johnny, but I ought to start that jeep up the mountain.
I'm ready anytime.
I'll let Gino know you're coming. And you check with me if you want anything. You'll have full cooperation from the federal police and the government. And to repeat just one thing, Johnny.
Yeah, I know. Whoever did it, get him.
Check.
The jeep driver was a young Mexican boy who'd been brought up in the best and wildest chauffeuring traditions of the capital. He knew only one way to drive, with both accelerator and horn wide open. Since most of the other drivers were playing the same game, it was a sheer miracle that we ever got through the narrow streets of the city and finally reached the open valley. Maybe the colored postcard pasted on the dashboard, a picture of the Virgin of Guadalupe, had something to do with it. We finally left the last cart road and bumped along a narrow woodcutter's trail, cleared and widened enough now so that we could drive into the crash area and miss the mile and a half walk the first rescue party had been forced to take. For some reason, only a small part of the wreckage had caught fire and burned, and the rest was strewn piecemeal along a great raw gash through the trees and brush. Men in uniforms of the Mexican Army searched through the tragic debris, lifting, sorting, and collecting. And nearby, a silent group of Indians were watching, with the age-old sadness in their eyes.
You are Senor Dollar, no?
Yes.
Gino Romero, Senor.
Oh, glad to know you, Gino.
It's a terrible thing, no?
Yeah. Any ideas yet?
Not of importance, but it's certain now this. It was caused by one explosion which has occurred in the baggage compartimento. Venga, sir. Come on. We have found many pieces which can be identified, can be known which part of the plane they are in before the crash.
I see.
Toward the front, these pieces are more large, but in the back, near the tail, they are very little. Here, you look. These are pieces of the baggage. Muy pequeño.
Hmm?
Very tiny.
Oh, yeah. The crash itself wouldn't have done this. It had to be an explosion.
Seguro. Look. It's burnt a little, each one of these pieces, but these more big ones from the seats of the plane, they are not burnt. Here, you smell these ones.
Hmm. Yeah, I see what you mean. Either dynamite or nitroglycerin.
Was dynamite. We have found little tiny pieces of red paper from the wrappings on the sticks. Was dynamite.
Any idea how much? How big a charge?
One of the soldados, Pascual, who have used much explosive, is think maybe 30 or 40 pounds.
Light enough to be put on board in a piece of luggage. It's going to be tough, Gino. Plenty tough to...
They're bringing out the bodies.
The Indians set up a low, wailing dirge, and one of them taps softly on a native drum. A wordless terror before the ancient mystery, death. One by one, the bodies passed us, borne by the silent soldiers.
Madre de Dios, may they find peace.
Then, for the first time, I noticed the girl, standing alone some distance away, watching without expression as the stretchers passed her. She was young, blonde, and beautiful. Not conventionally so, but beautiful as a young animal is beautiful. And she looked very much out of place.
You are observing the señorita, no?
What's she doing up here?
Quién sabe. She's strange, that one. Always she's look for danger. She's what you say, the daredevil. But it's like she's always have the charm. Death has never find her. So perhaps she has come here to look on his face.
Do you know who she is?
Well, see. She's American. Her name is Marvel Terrence.
Marvel Terrence?
You have heard of her, senor?
I'd heard of her, all right. And I'd wondered what kind of a girl would have a first name like Marvel. And now I knew, partly at least. And I planned to find out a whole lot more. 3 of the people who died on that plane had taken out flight policies. Maria de Lagos was one of them. The other 2 were men, both of whom had named as beneficiary Marvel Terrence.
Now, here here's our star to tell you about tomorrow's intriguing episode of this week's story.
Tomorrow, a fighting girl and a lucky break, and then murder cancels the score. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
As always, thank you, lads. But we are not going to be joining next week. We'll be joining here later at the end of the program. Another episode of the Flight 6 Matter, starring Bob Bailey. Coming up next, we've got another Western. This is Fort Laramie. This one, Fort Laramie was created by Norm McDonough. From what I understand, he brought most of the crew from... Pardon me a second. He brought most of the crew over from Gunsmoke. I know the soundscape people were the same. I covered that a couple of weeks ago. But yeah, Fort Laramie. We're going to go from Mexico to... frontier of Wyoming. This has an original air date. Actually, it's called Galvanized Yankee. It has an original air date of the 7th of October, 1956. Elvis would have been gaining steam about this time and become more known. I actually thought to look up some of that Ed Sullivan stuff to see about when he made his appearances. That's neither here nor there, because this is the grand hour, and I concentrate on radio dramas here on 91.5 FM, WMFO, and or WMFO.org, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. Again, this is Raymond Burr, Fort Laramie, Galvanized Yankee, with an original air date of the 7th of October, 1956. This was... Fort Laramie only lasted one season, and Raymond Burr would go on the next year to become his most famous role, Perry Mason. Thanks for listening.
Raymond Burr as Captain Lee Quince. Specially transcribed tales of the dark and tragic ground of the wild frontier. The saga of fighting men who rode the rim of empire. And the dramatic story of Lee Quince, Captain of Cavalry.
Looks like the freight's at the far end of the train, Gorse.
I expect it is, Captain, because I took care to see the wagons was up front here to make the loading easier.
Well, see, they're moved to the back.
Yes, sir. You got the list, Captain?
Yeah. Two men unloading ought to be enough. Nothing real heavy. Here you are.
Rifles, carbines, revolvers, sabers. Well, it says infantry equipment's here.
Well...
You don't suppose they tucked in a few howitzers? We only brought the two wagons.
Anything we can't haul back, we'll leave. Let ordnance do its own work.
Rest of it looks like ours. Bridles, halters, and straps, saddles, nose bags. I'll see to the unloading, Captain.
Right, Gorse.
You there, Captain?
Yes?
You from Fort Laramie?
That's right. I'm glad to hear that. I'm station master here. You better come into my office and get this business cleared up.
Well, the sergeant's got the billing on the army equipment we're unloading.
Now, that's not what I'm talking about. Now you're here, I just want you to get them out of my station. I'm running a guardhouse, you know.
I'd give a little to know what you are talking about, mister.
Them two soldiers chained together in there, and the guard with them. They say they're bound for Fort Laramie.
Private Medford and Private Stringer, that right?
That's right, sir. The little one, Stringer, he doesn't say much. Tall, blonde one, he's Medford.
And you're Corporal Benjamin?
Yes, sir.
Well, their orders say Fort Laramie clear enough. You got orders, Corporal?
Yes, sir. Fort Bridger, sir, from Fort Leavenworth. A transfer, sir.
Mm-hmm.
I was to escort Medford and Stringer this far, sir, and contact Fort Laramie to secure them from here.
Well, you made contact, Corporal. We'll take over.
I don't understand, sir. Fort Laramie's 40 miles from here. I only telegraphed 10 minutes ago, sir.
We had a good wind behind us on the way down.
Beg your pardon, sir?
We came to pick up a consignment of equipment. Left Fort Laramie yesterday.
Oh, well, then, what you said about the wind behind
was
you...
was a bald-faced lie, Corporal.
Yes, sir. The captain displays a fine touch of humor.
You mustn't encourage me, Corporal. Now, you better arrange for your transportation to Fort Bridger. Good luck.
Thank you, sir. Good luck to you, sir.
All right, on your feet.
Yeah.
Private Stringer?
Yeah?
How's that?
That's me, Stringer.
You stationed at Fort Leavenworth?
I was took there. They give me this uniform, this tall one next to me, a length of chain, and then they put me on the railroad.
You're a recruit, then?
If that means that I join up of my own free will, no.
You've been in the army before?
Mostly, I've been in jail. Don't it say on them papers about me?
If it did, I wouldn't be asking.
I've been in the army 6 days. I heard talk you could make the arrangement on account of enlistments being slow. I could get out of jail if I signed I'd join the army.
Stand up straight. Now you get this, Stringer. There's not the time to tell you how much learning you got ahead of you. But you learn. Starting now, understand?
Yeah?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
All right. I guess we can take those chains off now.
Is there any reason you ain't asking questions of me, sir?
I don't have to, Medford. It says about you in your papers.
Well, maybe it don't say it all in them papers, Captain.
Says enough. There. You ride back to Fort Laramie in the wagons with the equipment. We don't have horses for you.
We ride free of these chains, Captain?
Free of the chains.
Man alone might jump off of one of them wagons.
Might.
But that ain't your worry, sir?
That's your worry, Medford. Jumping the wagon is desertion. If you walk away, you'll be caught. If you run, you'll be shot. Sergeant, dismiss him.
Yes, sir.
Platoon? Yes, miss.
Captain?
Yes, Sergeant?
I'll see the wagons is unloaded.
And pick what men you need, then take the wagons to the wheelwright. Tell him if he can't fix them proper, to burn them.
Right, Captain. About the new men...
What about them?
Are they assigned to B Company, sir?
They're not assigned anywhere yet, Gorse.
We could sure use them, Captain, starting right now with the unloading of the equipment.
They'll have to be assigned first.
Well, that'll take most of the rest of the day, Captain. There ain't more than an hour's work.
Get someone else to do it, Gorse.
Yes, sir. There's a reason, Captain, you don't want Stringer and Medford to help.
Yeah? Reasons like you'll be unloading rifles and carbines and 50,000 rounds of ammunition.
I guess when you want to tell me the rest of that story, you will.
And there'll be a right time, Gorse.
Yes, sir.
All right, you two. Fall in behind me. You'll report to headquarters company for assignment.
All right, if I ask a question, mister? Captain.
What is it?
Well, now, I'm brand new to this life, I told you that. I don't even know where this headquarters company's at and all like that.
I'll see you get there, Stringer. Any more questions?
I got one, sir.
Well, Medford?
When do they outfit us proper?
Proper, Medford?
I mean, I got this brand new blue uniform. When they gonna give me... When they gonna give me my rifle and sidearms?
When you're assigned?
They mean I should have them firearms in. Just like anyone else.
Just like anyone else, Medford.
Captain Quince.
Yes, Lieutenant?
Are these the transfer, sir?
Private Stringer and Medford.
The Major sent me to see they're assigned and quartered. He's anxious to see you, Captain.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Sabots.
Corporal Benjamin's telegram wasn't quite clear, Captain. Something about respectfully urging that we pick up two prisoners from Fort Leavenworth.
You get my telegram all right?
Yeah, saying you were bringing two transfers from Fort Leavenworth. Now, which are they, prisoners or transfers?
A little of both, I guess.
If Fort Laramie's to become a military prison, I'd like to hear it from someone other than a corporal.
Now, these men aren't prisoners anymore, Major. For some reason, they sent them as far as Cheyenne under Corporal Benjamin's guard.
You got their papers?
They're at headquarters company, but I read them. Stringer, they let him out of a civilian jail if he'd promised he'd join the army.
Oh, under that plan to make up for slow enlistments. I read about it when the order came through a couple of months ago. He decided to face that problem when it came up.
It's come up, Major.
Any idea what he was serving time for?
Oh, he gave me the idea. He's made a career for himself being in prison. I didn't ask about specific crimes. I know this. He's never been in the army.
We can fix that part. The other one, he from prison, too?
Yeah. Camp Butler first, then Camp Douglas.
You're talking about military prisons, Captain?
Union Army prisons for Confederate captives. Private Lacey Medford. He's our first galvanized Yankee, Major.
Galvanized Yankee? Never heard that term.
Well, it has something to do with iron. When it's galvanized, it turns color. Men like Medford, they were captured in gray, sent west in blue.
Well, like you say, Lee, this is a new problem for us.
Might not be a problem.
No, but it seems likely enough. Most of your men fought in the Union Army.
That war's long over.
Not in men's minds, Lee. For some men on both sides, it'll never be over.
Major, in B Company alone, we got Irish and English bunking side by side. Same with Germans and French. We can't put a Yankee and a rebel side by side. We got more trouble than just Indians.
I'm glad you don't consider it a problem.
I said it might not be one. When it is, if it is, I'll treat it as a problem. Fair enough?
Fair enough.
The way you're talking, you've made up your mind to give me Stringer and Medford, huh?
B Company's got fewer men than the rest. Any objections?
No, not from me.
You like challenges, don't you, Lee?
You keep telling me I do.
Well, I hope Medford won't be a problem. But if he is, I'll feel better knowing he's your problem.
Thanks.
What's your impression of him, right off?
Right off, I'd say he's awful anxious to get his own rifle and sidearms. Till I know better, I'm going to figure he's itching to get himself an Indian.
I tell you, Stringer, these private riding lessons ain't going on forever.
Well, I got an idea I could ride just fine if I ever once got on the horse.
Well, you're no youngin'. How you been getting around without learning the first thing about mounting?
I ain't been getting around, Sergeant. There's been no call for it.
Will you just sit where you come from?
Sit or laid down? You don't know nothing about me? I mean, before?
Don't know and don't care. But you're sure looking more like infantry to me every minute.
You mean that Captain ain't told you about me?
Captain Quinn's got important things to think about.
Yeah, he sure has. That Medford. I was Captain, I'd think about him a lot.
Never mind about Medford. He can mount and ride and dismount with the best of them.
He oughta. He was in the dirty yellow rebel cavalry.
Stand a horse.
You don't care about that? You want a stinking rebel in your army?
Now, you listen good to me, Stringer. I got a guardhouse with a fine view of the Laramie River down there. Any more talk out of you, send you right there.
Well, I feel a sight safer in the guardhouse. I ain't been a month out of jail since I was 10.
Well, you just talked yourself right back in again, Stringer.
All right. Fine. Can I talk free about Medford now?
You got anything to say, you say it to me and nobody else, you understand?
Well, you ain't thinking this is no secret. About him being a lousy rebel. Why, he tells everybody in earshot. You know, he's proud of it, right, proud.
That's his business.
You fought in that war, Sergeant. How can you stand the thought of him being one of you now?
Maybe because I fought in that war, Stringer. What jail was you sitting it out in then?
You think more of him than me?
You're in for a lot of things you won't understand, Stringer. You can think him over in the guardhouse.
I ain't gonna think nothing over. But here's something you can think over, Sergeant. That yellow rebel's got himself a lot of guns, all kinds, rifles to pistols and back again. Think it over. See if you rest easy on it.
Medford's outside, Captain. You want I should send him in now?
In a minute, Gores. How far has all this gone? Can you tell?
It's all over. About him being in the Confederate cavalry. About how he was took prisoner, sent out here now. This thing about the guns, I hear that all through the quarters, too.
You seen the guns?
No, sir.
I checked ordnance and stores. Everything's accounted for. Ammunition, rifles, carbines, revolvers.
Well, he claims he brought them all in with him. Men say that.
In a haversack and saddlebag?
I'm just telling you what the men say, Captain. You said we was going out in a few days. You figuring to take him along?
That'll be up to him, Gorse.
Yes, sir.
You can send him in now.
Right, Captain. Medford, Captain Quince will see you now.
Sit down, Medford.
I prefer to stand, sir.
Sit down. You got any complaints on your treatment here? I want to hear about them now.
I got a complaint. I'm here.
But I can't do much about that, Medford.
Neither can I. I want free to choose.
If you were free, what would you do? Go back home?
There ain't no home. There ain't nobody. Men like you saw to that.
Suppose you could get out, maybe stake a claim, maybe get a little farm,
no,
store.
It's all took out of me. I don't want none of that. I don't want anything save to be let be.
It's not all out of you. The hate's still there.
You bet it is. I get all the strength I got from hating.
Sure, you're feeding it all the time.
Well, there's a lot to hate. This here blue uniform, you can start there. That Spencer rifle you issued me. You gonna let me talk free?
You're talking right free. Go ahead.
Well, that Spencer, I never seen one. I just heard a man about him. We used to figure you Yankees spent one day a week just loading them and the rest of the week firing them at us. We didn't have their like.
No, you didn't. So now you got one. It'll fire 8 shots. Only there aren't any Yankees left to kill.
There ain't nothing but Yankees.
You better get over that feeling, Medford.
I'm gonna die with it.
You don't want to die.
You know that, do you?
You had a lot of chances to die. You could have died in prison if you'd made up your mind to it. You could have died any day out here, starting from the first day you rode in on the wagon.
How you figure that?
You could have jumped the wagon. I'd have killed you. I told you that. And since you're here, you're on the rifle range real regular. The way you've been talking, you could goad a man into killing you.
The men, they've been reporting to you right along?
You've been talking your hate right free.
They tell you about my guns, did they?
Got a lot of guns, have you, Medford?
Well, you ain't searched real good, Captain.
I haven't searched at all. I'm not going to.
If I got guns, you'd have cause to be fearful.
Maybe. Got any more complaints?
What kind of a man are you? I told you I hate your uniform, everything about you, what you stand for.
I'm this kind of man, Medford. I got a cavalry company that's short of men. We're moving out in a couple of days. Now, maybe we don't like the same things or hate the same things. But we're stuck with each other, Medford.
You taking me on an engagement? Taking me to fight Indians under your flag?
You scared of Indians, Medford?
It's not that.
I'm taking you. You got something you're living for. I want to find out what it is.
We're strung out about as thin as we can be, Captain.
You know, the longer they think we can hold them down there, the better. I don't think we'll be able to fool them long.
Got us outnumbered. 2-1, anyway.
Sure have, Mr. Saberts. Our horses still secure?
Behind the top of the rise, yes, sir.
Well, those Indians are smart. They'll circle us. There's enough of them to do it.
Have you thought about retreat, Captain?
I've thought of nothing else since we got boxed in. We'll retreat when we can, Mr. Syberts. If we can.
Captain, sir.
Medford?
Captain, can you see their horses from here? There must be a couple hundred of them.
The ones they stole, caught in the ravine down there?
Yes, sir.
What about them?
We stampeded those horses. Them engines would clear out of here in no time.
We'd have to ride a charge down there to stampede them. That's suicide, Medford. They'd pick us off one by one as we rode down.
Well, ain't that our only chance, Captain?
Getting killed's not the chance we're looking for.
Yeah, but, Captain, it's not.
Get back to your position, Medford. Now.
Yes, sir.
Hold your fire, men. Hold your fire!
Hold your fire!
I brought your mount, Captain. You saw what he did.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going down there, Mr. Saberts. He might still be alive. Thing you did, Medford.
I told you. Stampede, run them off.
And I told you it was suicide.
We was both right, Captain. You gonna court-martial me?
For breaking orders? Or saving our lives?
My rifle, is it close by?
You want to use it, Medford?
No. Just you look at it, Captain.
Brass mountings. Your old Enfield, huh?
I carried that at Brandy Station. Along with an old flintlock and a German musket.
Good rifle, Enfield. I got shot with one at Bull Run.
I had to kill something with it. Captain, you said I had something I was living for. You remember?
I remember.
One decent thing. I was captured after Brandy Station, Captain. They caught me running away. Deserted. I had to do one decent thing.
Yeah. Well, you're dying decent, Medford. That's something.
Fort Laramie is produced and directed by Norman MacDonald and stars Raymond Burr as Lee Quince, Captain of Cavalry,
with Vic Perrin as Sergeant Gorse. The script was specially written for Fort Laramie by Kathleen Height, with sound patterns by Bill James and Tom Henley. Musical supervision by Amerigo Marino. Featured in the cast were Lawrence Dobkin, Parley Bear, Frank Cady, and Paul Dubov. Jack Moyles is Major Daggett, and Harry Bartell is Lieutenant Syberts.
Company, attention! Dismiss!
Next week, another transcribed story of the Northwest frontier and the troopers who fought under Lee Quince, Captain...
Yeah, I can't promise you next week we're going to have another Fort Laramie, but we will have another Western. And that actually was very interesting. That was Galvanized Yankee with an original air date of the 7th of October, 1956. I have to fulfill an FCC obligation quickly. And again, that starred Raymond Burr. I'm kind of all over the map this morning. Fort Laramie only ran, I believe, 40 episodes in 1956. And that was it. And Raymond Burr auditioned and got the role of Perry Mason on television. Actually, he has a pretty... unique voice. And again, there's Parley Bear was in that one. He seems to be, he's like longitude and latitude. He's all over the place, all over the map. So actually, let me fulfill this FCC obligation here for a second.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule zero. All guns are always loaded. Rule 1. Never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2. Keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3. Be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Gun safety.
Thank you, Digital George and Digital Henry, for that. Okay, as promised, I didn't believe I promised you, but I told you, we're going to follow up what we began the program with today. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is episode 317. Of the Flight 6 Matter. It's actually episode 2 of the Flight 6 Matter, but totality, it's episode 317 of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey. This had an original air date of the 31st of January, 1956. Again, Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar had a couple of different inceptions. It had, mostly it ran as a 30-minute program, but here in 1956, they broke it up, 15-minute dailies. Comprising of 5 shows for a week. So here we go. We'll continue with the Flight 6 Matter. So from Wyoming to Medford to Mexico. Thanks for listening. This is Arthur here on the Grand Hour on 91.5 FM, Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. You can listen to us at WMFO.org.
Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar here. Go ahead.
McMacklin, Johnny. Is Gino around?
Yeah, he's over across the slope at the moment. They're getting the bodies out of what's left of the plane.
Well, how does it look? Anything new?
Nothing we hadn't already guessed. It was an explosion, all right. Dynamite in the baggage compartment. Probably put on board in a piece of luggage.
Well, that figures. I've run into something down here in the city along those same lines.
What do you mean?
The ground crew remembers one of the baggage handlers acting strange before Flight 6 took off last night. A man named Ramirez.
What do you mean, strange?
They say he had one suitcase that he wouldn't let any of the other handlers touch. Put it on the plane himself just before takeoff.
Hey, you know anything about tigers, Mac?
Tigers?
I'm about to tangle with one.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. From Special Investigator Johnny Dollar, location Mexico City, to the Home Office Guaranteed Transport Insurance Company, Hartford, Connecticut. Assignment, the Flight 6 matter. Expense account continued. I was taking Gino Romero's word for it that the girl was a tiger. His word and my own instincts. At first glance, she seemed soft, shy, and lovely. Then you sensed a wildness about her, a kind of suppressed violence that brought you up short and made you stop and reappraise her. She leaned against a tree, watching the bodies of the plane crash victims being carried down the slope and placed in the Army Jeep, with no sign of emotion on her face. Cool, detached. She had no reason to be here, and I wondered why she was. The only way I knew of finding out was to ask her.
Yes, what is it?
You're Marvel Terrence, I believe.
That's right, and I've not met you somewhere before.
No, but you're about to. My name is Johnny Dollar. I'm an investigator for an insurance company up in the States.
I'm sure it must be very interesting work.
Sometimes, on some jobs. Other times, it's only dirty and disgusting. Like this time, for instance.
Well, we all have our problems.
Maybe I can help you with yours, Miss Terrence.
Run along, will you? I'm not in the mood.
Oh, you amaze me. I think that seeing 10 bodies picked up and hauled away ought to put anyone in a gay, carefree mood.
Look, beat it.
You came out here sightseeing, didn't you? 20 miles from town? So you must like this kind of thing.
I had friends on that plane, Mr. Dollar.
So did a lot of other people. But maybe not as good friends as you had.
I don't know what you're talking about, and I don't care.
E.H. Palmer and Jim Rourke? Were those your friends, Miss Terrence?
Now, let's get this straight. I'm not interested in playing footsies or any other game you have in mind. You're wasting your time, Buster. Now get going.
Oh, well, wait a minute. Maybe you've got the wrong idea. This isn't just a social chat.
No, you want to help me with my problem.
Just one problem. I'm wondering how you're going to spend that $50,000.
What?
Yeah, that's a fair-sized chunk of money to drop right out of the sky.
What are you talking about? What $50,000?
The money you'll get from the deaths of your two friends, Palmer and Rourke.
What do you mean?
Say, tell me, were you with them at the airport last night when Flight 6 took off?
Yes, I was.
Then you must have known that they both took out flight policies and that both of them named you as beneficiary.
No. No, I didn't know. I wasn't with them exactly. At least, not up until takeoff.
Then you claim this is all just a big surprise.
Of course, I didn't know a thing about it. But it's just like them. It's what they do.
Why did you come out here to the wreck, Miss Terrence?
I don't know. Ed and Jim were my friends, and I don't know why I came, Mr. Dollar.
She came because I brought her, mister.
No, Bill.
But I didn't bring her here to be pushed around by some morbid curiosity, huh?
No, please. This is Johnny Dollar, Bill. He's an insurance investigator. Bill Blakely, Mr. Dollar.
Hello.
He was asking me some questions.
Why you?
Because Ed and Jim both took out insurance policies in my name.
What?
Flight accident policies, $50,000 worth.
Well, I'll
Mr. Blakely, you said Miss Terrence is here because you brought her. I wonder if you'd tell me why you're here.
I don't know that it's any of your business.
Sometimes I make things my business.
And sometime you may get your teeth knocked out.
They're in pretty solid, Blakely.
Yeah? Well, maybe...
Bill, stop it.
Sorry, Marvel.
Ed Palmer and Jim Rourke were Bill's business partners.
What business, Mr. Blakely?
Engineering. We're building some roads around Mexico City.
How many partners? Just the three of you?
Yeah, it's just... That's right, Dollar. The business belongs to me now. What about it?
Nothing about it. Congratulations.
One more crack.
Bill, I said stop it.
Let's go, Marvel. I've got to get back to town.
Wait for me at the truck. I'll be there in a few minutes.
All right. Sit yourself. Dollar, just one thing. Don't push me.
Blakely, 10 people died over there on that hillside last night. They were murdered. I intend to find out who did it. And if it takes pushing to find out, then I'll push. See you around.
Yeah, you probably will.
This thing hit Bill pretty hard, Mr. Dollar. You have to make allowances.
How long have you known him?
A couple of months.
And Palmer and Rourke?
The same. It's nothing serious, nothing romantic, if that's what you're thinking. It was all just for fun.
Was that all it was on their side?
Oh, men always claim to be serious. But that's only part of the game.
What else do you do, Miss Terrence, beside play the game?
That's all. I'm a wealthy orphan, Mr. Dollar, and my only career is drifting around the world playing the game. I'm ornamental, irresponsible, and rather useless.
Maybe not entirely useless. Just being ornamental has some importance in this world.
So you play too, huh?
No, I meant it.
I guess I was pretty obnoxious when you spoke to me a while ago.
Well, I suppose I asked for it.
I'm staying at the Hotel Monte Cassino.
Are you?
I'd like to see you again. I could teach you the game, Johnny.
Well, that's a very attractive offer, outside of business hours.
But you think I'm mixed up in this?
No, I'm not sure.
Well, think about it, Johnny. And call me at my hotel.
The Monte Cassino. That's where DeLagos is staying. Happen to know him?
Ramon? Well, yes, of course. Why?
Well, one of the passengers killed on that plane was his wife. Didn't you know?
I saw the name DeLagos, but I didn't even know he had a wife.
Another, just for fun?
I think you've got some wrong ideas about me, Johnny. Come see me and I'll straighten them out for you.
All right. I will.
And something else. You'll find it out anyway, so I may as well tell you.
Tell me what?
I had reservations on Flight 6, too. I was going over to Havana for the weekend. I canceled out at the last minute.
I see.
Maybe that's why I came out here. To see for myself. I'm not afraid of death. I've tempted it too many times to be. But it does fascinate me. I stood there watching and thinking. It could have been me being carried down that slope. Except for luck.
Why did you cancel out at the last minute?
I was talked out of making the trip.
By whom?
Bill Blakely.
I watched her swing down the slope, lithe, erect, and lovely. A strange girl, with an air of aloneness about her, an air that I felt would be with her even in the crowd. Strange, but also compelling, exciting. She might be involved, or she might not. I didn't know. But I was sure of one thing. In either case, I was going to see her again. An hour later, Gino Romero and I were heading back toward the city in the government jeep, leaving behind us the wrecked plane, the crushed trees, and the lonely slope on the mountain.
You have found the young lady of interest, senor?
Yeah, I found her of interest.
Always she's doing the crazy things. Daredevil, flirting with the eyes, looking for danger.
Playing the game, she calls it.
Si, senor. Playing the game. Que lastima. It is too sad that 10 persons are not be playing the game now anymore.
Oh, it's all right, Gino. I'm not that much under her spell.
¿Qué dice?
If she's guilty in any way, I'll pin it on her just as quick as the next one.
Oh, but I did not.
It's all right, forget it.
No, I do not think she's guilty. It is not a thing she would do, and she does not need the money. She's very rich.
Do you know that?
Everybody says so.
Well, that's what I mean. It's worth checking into.
Yes. Possible, but I still do not think she would do such a thing. It is too terrible.
And she's too beautiful. Maybe I ought to give you the advice, Gino.
Before the beauty of a woman, senor, we are all as brothers, like Senor Blakely. I see he was look very disturbed.
Yeah, he did get a little hot under the collar. What do you know about him, Gino?
Almost nothing. He's come here for 3 months now, making the road.
And his partners, Palmer and Rourke, were killed in the plane crash. What do you know about them?
The same. Nothing. They all arrive together, always. They work together, play together.
Then along came Marvel Terrence.
True. They were all rivals for the senorita.
And there is one thing.
What's that?
They have the building for the machinery outside the city, the warehouse, you call it.
What about it?
In this warehouse, they keep much dynamite.
Gino dropped me at my hotel, the Del Prado, on Avenida Juarez. I changed clothes, cleaned up, sent some telegrams to the States. At about that time, Mac Macklin phoned up from downstairs and asked me to join him in the bar. Expense account item 3, $16.40. Drinks and dinner with the chief inspector of the Federal Department of Civil Air Transport. And then some more drinks.
I've been here 7 years, Johnny. I like it. I feel at home here. I like the people and their way of life. But it'd still be good to see you all shy again. The snow piling up along the loop, and the wind ripping in off the lake, the crazy little joints along Baker Street.
When were you there last, Mac?
1932.
Oh, then you're about due. Well, why don't you take a couple of weeks and fly up there?
No. Too much water under the bridge, Johnny. Too many little wars here and there in the world since 32. Mm. And two of them, McMacklin was flying in them. On one side or the other.
Oh, what of it?
Well, you know, Uncle Sam frowns on that kind of thing, Johnny. So we've got a sort of an understanding. I stay the heck away, and he forgets about me.
I see.
I've got no complaints, actually. I'm doing all right here, but sometimes I sure do get homesick for the old town. Of course, it's probably changed so much that I... Oh, yeah, yes.
Confirm me, so the telephone, Señor McLean.
Oh, thanks.
I plug it in.
Hello, yeah? What? All right, well, have you told the federal police? Yeah, I'll be here for a while. Adios. Well, we just lost our best angle, Johnny.
What do you mean?
That baggage handler, the one I figured slipped the dynamite on board the plane. The boys just now located him. His throat has been cut.
Now, here's our star to tell you about tomorrow's intriguing episode of this week's story.
Tomorrow, a bereaved relative lies, a frustrated lover comes up fighting, and a lovely lady in the case just vanishes. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Tomorrow that we hear episode 3 of the Flight 6 matter. It'll be next Wednesday, which is the 21st. So we want an increment of 7 on Wednesdays. 7 last week, 14th today. Okay, yes, that was the Flight 6 matter, episode 2, with an original air date of the 31st of January, 1956. Appreciating that, on today's Grand Hour, we had Fort Laramie, Galvanized Yankee, very interesting. And we started everything off, the whole show, the whole shebang, 5 a.m. with episode 1 of the Flight 6 matter, starring Bob Bailey, as yours truly, Johnny Dollar. That show, you know, I'm actually glad. I'm kind of enjoying this one. I'm glad I took his advice last week. I went ahead and continued. Because last week we had the Red, the Duke Red matter. I had a doctor named Red Duke. That's why I get confused, and that's actually why I played that one before. That's it for today, for this week. Next week we'll continue on with the Flight 6 matter. And again, Western, as always. This is Arthur, and you're listening to 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org. Tufts, freeform radio here in Medford. do this, we're going to have to put you all on automation.